interviewing Herbert Tender.
Mr. Tender, I'm going to ask you some questions about Kenny Clark Foundation, which you were an original trustee. Now, we have the charter in the rectory files, and you have here the minutes of the meeting that this was to build the present Kenny Clark Hall, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Now, the foundation was formed in 1949. And this hall was then built in
1954.
Mm-hmm. And this these minutes state there was a called meeting to discuss building the hall.
That's right.
And the priest was here at the time was Father Victor Schmidt.
That's right.
Okay. This paper states that they gave the youth permission to tear down the old Wernitz Hall. And then they saved all the lumber and whatever was used.
Everything that was usable, with the exception of the roofing, the metal roofing. That
Okay, do you remember the building of this present hall? How did they build it?
It was all donated labor.
The men worked on it.
They worked on it, donated their labor. Except a few of the carpenters or pastors like that.
They had to do sort of specialized work. But they worked sort of concentrated for, I can remember them being down there a few days doing, you know, the major work. But everybody sort of gave their volunteer labor. And it was built real quickly, if I remember that, too.
I don't remember who put up the tile.
Okay, the foundation was formed in 1949, and are you still a member of this board?
No.
Oh, you're not. Are any of the original trustees still members?
Frankie Keller and...
And Gabe Hans?
Gabe Hans.
I guess they're the only two. Could you tell me, what did you think were the major accomplishments of Kenny Clark Foundation after they took it over for this parish?
It's very good.
They improved the grounds.
Yeah, they improved the grounds, and they kept on improving every year as they went along.
And in this first meeting, they did stipulate the 10%
That's right.
of the annual picnic.
That's stipulated in there.
Go ahead and read it.
Also, the benefit functions given in the park to pay not less than 10% for the expense and upkeep of the park.
Mm-hmm. And they also have taken care of the trees, haven't they?
Yeah.
They
planted quite a few more trees, haven't they?
Mm-hmm. And took care of the con trees.
The cons.
And so every year they do make improvements for the benefit of the St. Louis Dade.
That's right.
Primarily.
Because they improved, they enlarged them. That eating space, they tripled that from the start. The Jaggers were ready to sell the place. They didn't want to get it. They tried to keep it for the parish because they always had their parish functions down there before.
Do you remember the place when it was owned by the Wernitz?
Well, no.
That was very early, wasn't
it? Yeah.
Because
I heard my father talk about it. See, in those days, they had a park down at the Wernitz. And that's where the people would congregate on a Sunday evening. And they'd bring their lunch and things because we always had service in the evening.
And they would go there.
They'd go down there after the mass and have their dinner and
then go back for Vespers.
For Vespers, yeah.
We have a picture of
because in those days they come. They didn't have cars. They come with a horse and buggy.
We have a picture of Wernitz Gordon in around 1900, you know, with the hall, how the pavilion looked when they first built it. Well, let's see. You have been the undertaker here in Castro for how many years, Mr. Tunney?
40.
40 years. And you're still in the business, so to speak. You help with the business, even though you sold the business to Mr. Gwynn, Bud Gwynn. Okay, how did you get your training for undertaking business?
Well, see, Esther Julius used to work with him.
With who?
With John Hoyger from Huntsville. And then after he passed away, well, I'd taken it over. And then in 1936, I went to the Obama School in Dallas.
Uh-huh. And about how long did that take you to learn that?
Well, at that time, it was only 3 months. That's why I made up my mind to hurry to go. Uh-huh. That was the last course for 3 months.
Oh, I see.
After that, it was 6 months.
Uh-huh. And then you just started in, or did you work for Mr. Harder?
No, I was. See, before, well, I had funeral business before, if only I couldn't do that.
The embalming.
Embalming work. I had a funeral director's license, but no embalmer's license. So we'd always have to get an embalmer, either Mr. Hoyger or some fellow from San Antonio to do our work.
Okay, now can you remember, before Mr. Harker was even the funeral director, how did they conduct the funerals here?
Well, they come out of San Antonio.
Oh.
It was mostly old, what was his name? Ludwig. He had most of these funerals out here.
They would come to the funeral place.
They'd come to, it wasn't a funeral place.
Yeah, I know.
They'd come to the homes and prepare the bodies.
Did they embalm them in those days?
Yeah.
Oh, they did.
And you'd take for years. Well, my father, they sold the caskets right at the store. People would come and buy the caskets, then take them home.
And the embalmer would come to the home and prepare
even
the body.
Even before the embalmer. See, that was in the...
When do you think they started embalming people? Can you remember it? Or was
well,
it before
of course,
your time?
They've been embalming people for years before that.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't practiced too much out here.
Just because of the cost involved, probably.
Well, no, and on account of inconvenience.
Uh-huh.
Taking those days most of the time, well, there used to be some of these women that go ahead and dress them, bathe them and dress them, and then just place them in the casket.
And they'd hold the wake at home?
Yeah, it was always held at home.
Uh-huh.
Of course, then they never, if they die one day, they'd bury them the next day.
Do you still remember the use of the horse-drawn?
Oh, yes.
And was the one that's in the Texas Institute now, is that the one that was used?
That's right. Before that, they had, these surreys are what they called them. They had these,
Hacks,
yeah. I still remember when they had some of those.
All right, who were the people that did that?
August Terror, just the only one that I remember.
And not Leo, just August?
August, yeah.
Okay, we're doing quite a bit of renovating on the cemetery up there. And I know for years the parish was just sort of letting you take care of the cemetery, and there wasn't any active work going on there. Now, we found in the San Jose archives where that wall was built in 1861, the rock wall around the cemetery. And when you took over as undertaker, what do you remember about the cemetery, or what was the understanding with the priest, or what do you know?
Well, of course, the priest, they kept those records. And seeing those down.
Who was the grave digger?
Adolph R. All by himself. He never had no help.
Now, we understood in the early days, that whenever they bury someone, they dig the next grave so it would be ready.
Well, I wouldn't know about that.
That was before your time.
Yeah.
And then I understood that when they had the cholera epidemics, they couldn't get them dug fast enough because they were dying so fast.
I imagine so.
Because that was the middle 1800s.
Yeah.
But you made all the arrangements for the funeral, but there was no, in other words, cemetery committee or anything ever working?
No.
Okay, I found in the Hondo Anvil Herald in the early 1900s where the Young Ladies Society had money-raising affairs like ice cream socials, and they used some of this money for the improvement of the cemetery. They bought the carpet that was about two-thirds way up there, remember that?
Yeah.
Woman? I think that was bought
by the standing on the other cemetery. No.
Is that the one?
Yeah.
Okay, that was put up somewhere around 1902. And evidently, so there was some organization doing some improvement work. You know, it wasn't much, I guess. Did people go up there and clean their graves in those days, too, or not?
Well, not too much. We always had it cleaned for
All Saints and All Souls.
All Saints, and most of the time, at least two times a year.
Would you just do this on your own, or would
no,
you clean
so it? No, the priest would come and say, well, Herbert, time we're going to clean the cemetery again. Will you get your money to clean it?
Mm. So you and the priest just worked out the same
thing. And then I'd pay the hands to clean it, and then after it was all over, they'd give me a check for it.
Uh-huh.
And you take all the shrubbery that's around the crucifix now, well, I planted that all myself. Mm-hmm. And I laid the water up there, the pipes, too.
Well, also, what about Mrs. Castro's grave there? Didn't you do something to that?
No, that well, the church had it done.
Oh, the church did?
Yeah.
They had any, put a little more concrete around to keep it from
floating. Well, see, the monuments were standing up at that time.
Oh.
So they laid them down in concrete to preserve them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now I heard this story, and I want to ask you about it. I know in the early days that there were very rigid rules about people being buried in the Catholic cemetery. And Mrs. Noonan told me that her grandfather was killed by the Vollmer, and that he was not buried in a cemetery simply because they judged that he was not, had not forgiven his enemy. And he was buried outside the wall. Now, where is that area?
That's right where the new part is now.
Where the Perpetual Care Cemetery
yeah,
is?
There's quite a few graves.
In other words,
there.
People that did something publicly that
yeah.
showed
or
that they
didn't
either,
live up to their church obligations, right?
They were buried there.
That's right.
Well, now, what happened to those graves?
Well, they were all, they're still there.
They're still there.
There used to be some iron fences, quite a number of them in there.
Oh,
the Lutheran Cemetery there. See, there was a road going right next to the Lutheran Cemetery, mm-hmm. but to the right of that was nothing but mesquite brush and stuff growing up. But there was quite a few graves in there.
And in other words, this was where
the people that
were not good Catholics
yeah,
were buried.
That's where they were buried.
They were Catholics, but they were just not either fallen away or something like
that's
that.
That's right.
Now, what about suicides? Were they buried there?
Yeah.
Suicides were not allowed inside mm-hmm. the cemetery. Okay, now the county also had a cemetery for people that were not of the Catholic or Lutheran religion, is that?
Yeah, that's still up there.
And that's across the highway?
Yeah.
On the north side of the highway?
I've buried several of them there.
You have? And the county pays for those burials? Are they paid for those burials?
No, they pay you very well.
Okay, the only priest that has served our community that is buried in our cemetery is Father Nansen.
That's right.
And his twin sister, Barbara, who was his housekeeper,
yeah.
is also buried. There's that one other priest buried, but he's under the church, and that's Father Chazelle.
There's a seminarian buried up there.
And who is that?
From Mexico at the time when they had the seminary here at Moy.
Oh, really? Do you remember his name?
Well, he's got a marker up there.
But he was a seminarian up
yes.
there?
Yes.
Young man?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, he was pretty far advanced in the
study of the
priesthood. Study of the priesthood.
So that would have been about the 1920s. That he
yeah.
Because they owned that from 1920 or 1919.
But there's, I can find out what his name is.
Uh-huh.
He's got a monument up there.
Now, Father Lenson, when he retired, or just before he was retired, he gave a gift to the parish in the form of a memorial altar, I guess you'd say, with some statues on it. And who were the other donors?
Bishop Fitzsimon and that was Reen.
Alice Reen.
Alfred Reen. Memory of Alfred Reen. Oh. Alice Reen gave it her.
And at that time, was the old cross removed?
It was removed and moved over to the other cemetery.
Mm-hmm. Cemetery number two.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. and Mrs. Tunder, I'd like to ask you about your family history a little bit. Herbert, your father and mother were?
Louis Tundry and Mary Curran.
All right, now was Louis Tunder married? No, I'm getting it. Okay, Louis Tunder had how many children?
Five.
Are you the oldest?
I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest. Okay, who are your brothers and sisters?
Well, Joe, no sisters.
Oh, all brothers.
There was Joe, Otto, Julius. No, I wasn't the youngest.
Julius was?
No.
Louis.
Herbert, and then there was Louis. He died when he was about 16 years old. He died from lockjaw.
Oh, really?
And I think they had another one that was born dead between Julius and I, at least.
Okay. Your father's father was?
Frank Tundry.
Okay. And your father's mother?
Was Elizabeth Kinnick.
Kinnick.
She was the sister to August Kinnick. To Miss Kinnick's husband's father.
Oh, okay. Now, your mother was?
Mary Curran.
And her father was?
Joe Curran.
And her mother was? Conrad. What was her mother?
Well, her mother's maiden name was Johannes.
Conrad?
Huh? No. Before she married Conrad.
Oh, I see. Now, your grandmother, her last name was Johannes?
No. Yes, but her maiden name
was Johannes.
Johannes.
How would you spell it? J-O-H-A-N-N-E-S?
Yeah.
And then her first husband was?
Conrad. I forget now what.
What his first name was?
No, I'd have to go find it up.
But then she married who after he died?
Joe Curran.
Curran, I see. Okay, now I've got it straight. She was married to a Conrad and then to a Curran. But.
And
who was your grandfather, the Courand or the Conrad?
Courand. And when she come over from Europe, she was 72 days in the war.
That's pretty long.
You see, in a sailboat.
Well, was she one of the first colonists here? Or did
she come to San Jose. And then some of her other relatives come later. They were all in Indiana. At the time, they wanted to come to Texas, but then they scared them on account of the Indians, so they settled in Indiana. To that priest, he didn't
say it. Should be buried on their stomach?
On their face, face down. Should be buried on face down to get their ass rest. And he said.
Okay. What do you remember about Father Heckman? He would give the yearly financial
report. What each parishioner gave during the year.
And he didn't mind, in other words, letting people know he didn't give anything.
And the Isidore Havis had bought a brand new one of those big Dodges. $1,800. $1,800 car, church support, nothing.
Did he announce this on the pulpit?
Yeah. What was my thinking, man?
Louis?
Louis, huh? That's when Father Heckman was here. She paid $3 church support. Then it raised her to $5 or $8. And I quit, and she never went to church anymore.
I was born in Hondo.
And who is your mother and father?
My father was Ferdinand Kilhan. He was born in Chesterville. My mother was Louisa Rankin. She was born in Chesterville, I imagine.
Well, your grandfather, Rankin, then your grandmother was
Katie Shearhart, and my grandfather was William Rankin. Where they were born, I don't know. All I can remember, they lived here in Chesterville at one time, but then most of the time they lived in San Antonio. He was a policeman. Died in 1918 in Hondo, the flu epidemic.
So your mother was widowed very young.
Yeah.
You weren't very old yourself.
I was five when he passed away. And she remarried, we were living in San Antonio, and she remarried in 22. She married Leo Rain.
And how many, you only have one brother?
I have one half-brother, Melvin, and then I have a sister, Madeline.
With a school teacher in France. He was a typical Frenchman. He didn't even know any other language when he came over.
Uh-huh.
And on the boat coming over, he studied English. And he run the business, and my grandmother done the buying. She'd go to San Antonio in the wagon.
Well, did you open a store almost immediately?
Yeah. Well, I think you got food first.
Yeah, I read somewhere with
yeah.
the Courier.
And then afterwards they
had a store.
Yeah.
It's our general dry goods.
Yeah. And see, she'd go to San Antonio to do the buying with the wagon. And I still remember my mother said that one, she'd always take a little Mexican boy or somebody along so she wouldn't be by herself. And she was coming out and it was raining and it was cold and it was dark. And she was afraid the mules wouldn't find the rope no more. So she gave the line to the little boy and she said she'd walk ahead and look for the rope. She had taken her dress up so he could see her white petticoat, and then she fell in the mud. And then she said, ah, let him go.
My father, yeah. Frank Tundra.
Yeah.
And he went to the doctors but couldn't find out what was the matter with him? Or what?
Well, he thought he had TB.
Uh-huh. So he went to see
Bishop DeVee.
DeVee. In San Antonio?
Yeah.
Because he knew him well.
Yeah.
They trusted him like he must have been.
Well, in those days, those priests, well, they were like a doctor, too. They take care of people and everything.
Well, according to, you know, what we read, they were their legal advisors
yeah.
and so forth. On all kinds of matters, they advised the people. So what did he do when he went to see Bishop DeVee then?
Then he come and bought some train wagons, and that's when they started fighting.
But what did DeVee tell him when he thought he had TB?
Yeah, and he said there was nothing wrong with him.
He said, get out and get you a wagon?
Yeah. Get out in the open.
And just work in the open, huh? Well, you know, evidently a lot of people thought they got consumption from the
yeah.
air down here because the Benedictines had a lot of trouble with people getting lung diseases down here.
Well, you think even in when we were going to school, yet there were so many of these nuns died from TB.
Hmm.
Wagon trains with his father.
Your grandfather was a freighter. Huh?
Yeah.
So that was a large business. A lot of people were
freighters. Well, they made all of these army camps. They'd go out to Brackenville, they'd go up to Fort Davis, and then Fort McCabot. All these different army camps is what they...
Uh-huh.
They'd be gone about 3 months at a time.
Did your grandfather ever work with August Sandleben? That,
no,
company?
No, he used to go with, Wantley.
Henry Wantley.
And I know my father said Henry Wantley, he had a special trained horse. When they get out in these prairies, they had a lot of antelope. And you couldn't shoot no antelopes because they were so
fast
and so he'd have his horse and he'd ride it till he'd get close to the antelope and then he'd get off and just take the horse tail and stay on that other side of the horse where the antelopes couldn't see him. See, they weren't scared of the horse. They didn't pay any attention to the horse. And then when he wanted the horse to stop, he'd just pull the tail like that and then the horse would stop and he'd sneak around and shoot the antelope.